world dominated by fear and mass manipulation of the media. Who can you trust? Just when you think there is no hope alive, you find out that there is an alternative news source to turn to. Revere Radio Network, keeping the dream of sovereignty and freedom alive for all. Revere Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect the views of Revere Radio Network, Rob Revere, or any other host on the network. They are the personal thoughts and feelings of the host given the presentation. We support total free speech here at Revere Radio Network, even when it's ugly. Enjoy.
Hey, you're listening to Revere Radio Network. Stay tuned.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Do you understand what I'm talking about? What is our common bond truly? Freedom. Freedom. Without freedom, you can't be a Christian no matter what denomination you belong to. You can't be a Buddhist. You can't own a donut shop. You can't drive from here to Oregon. You can't be an American because that's what it's all about, and it's the only thing that it's all about. Nothing else. Nothing else.
The utmost manifestation of love and devotion to America is today, as it always has been, resistance of tyranny. Resist we must, and resist we will. We will not be silent. We will not obey. We will not wait another moment in fear to stand up for what we know to be right. It is time we start meeting oppression with resistance.
It's about freedom. Only freedom. It means you have to let other people be free.
Yes, yes, ladies and gents. Back with another week. Truth, Love, Freedom radio show. Your host, So Real. That's me. And, as I said before in a recent show, that I'm going to be delving into the topics of Freemasonry at length. Especially now, considering it tends to be a more popular subject these days. As I'm listening to other radio shows, the topic of the Freemasonry and the mystery schools just keeps coming up over and over and over again. It's a good thing. I hope people aren't forgetting where the real root of the New World Order is. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Sometimes I hear some things that are a little disturbing to me because they're full of inaccuracies and speculation. But what can you say? Everybody has their own opinion, I suppose. But, of course, I'm going to give my version of my research. And it's up to you to decide whether or not what I say is true. And for that matter, what is truth in general? Today is November 13, 2008. Like I said, I'm your host, So Real. And let's go ahead and get into a few things. First thing first, the subject of the zeitgeist. I was talking about finishing up that until I felt like it was exhausted, but I decided to back out of that for a time. The reason being is that it was really difficult for me to talk about the things that are wrong with the zeitgeist movie without telling you what's right. Because there's been a lot of education out there from different speakers, and I'm not trying to challenge them. I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm just saying that from my understanding and my research and my perspective is different than theirs is. So because of that fact, I have to go into really what I believe to be the new world, what the new world order is, where it comes from, why the people who are in it think the way that they do, so that when we go into the topic of other teachings that are going on, you make a contrast. You can go, okay, because there seems to be a general consensus among the various researchers, as much as they differ in terms of politics and religion and things of that sort, but they have this perception that the New World Order is this tyrannical police state that's coming. And I don't think it is. And I've said that before, but in order for you to understand where I'm coming from, and for me, to understand what the New World Order really is not to understand what it looks like as a person looking at it on a surface level. It's to understand the mentality of the people who are behind the New World Order. What do they think about it? Why are they doing what they're doing? Like I always say, people say, well, it's just money and power. And I say, well, if it's money and power, how is it that you have hundreds, if not thousands of people over a span of hundreds of years, many of which worked their entire lives to achieve the goal of the New World Order and had never, ever, or knew that they would never, ever see it be accomplished. But yet they gave their lives to the purpose so that somebody else could have the New World Order. If it's just money and power, what good would the person have to work to that end? To hand off the agenda to another group of people? I mean, you have to answer that question, because if when you get into speculation and you're trying to get into understanding things, basically you have to make sense of what you're saying, and I don't feel like a lot of people can make sense of that. If you boil it down to money and power, it just doesn't make sense. Now, I've heard other things, and I think that it's probably the most promising path to take in trying to understand it, is that the New World Order is, in fact, a religious thing. And I've heard people say it's Zionism. I've heard people say it's, you know, just the Jews in general, controlling the world, whatever. I've heard a lot of different things about the Jews. I've heard, you know, the Jesuits. I've heard a lot of different things. But I think that all of them fall short when trying to connect all the ends. And I'm not saying that my argument connects all the ends. I'm just saying the majority of what. I've looked into a lot of different views, but none of them seem to hold water. So, with that being said, I want to get into some subjects today on the topic of Freemasonry, which I believe is the key to understanding this. And basically, what I'm attempting to do today, to some extent, I'm going to be dabbling here and there, kind of jumping around as we go, and just talking between quotes that I read. I like to take the information from the horse's mouth, because I can tell you all day long what I think, but if, you know what I'm saying, the bottom line is, what do they think? What I think is irrelevant. Unless it is what I'm saying that I think they believe, they really do believe. And the best way to do that is to confirm that with their own words. So that's what I aim to do. I aim to dispel this myth that the Freemasons worship Lucifer. I can tell you emphatically, and I think prove it. I hope I can. I can try. I mean, it's up to each individual to see if the evidence stacks up. But I believe I can prove that they don't worship Lucifer. That they do not even believe in a being named Lucifer or a being named Jehovah or Yahweh or any other so-called god. They are all symbolic representations of a philosophical concept. And if you can understand that and you can look at it from that perspective, breaking down Freemasonry is a lot easier. But before you can understand, because I know the first question that comes to mind is, okay, then why do they make you profess allegiance to some sort of deity before you can enter the lodge? And various things. We got to understand the purpose of Freemasonry and the purpose of the mystery schools in general is to take people who have what they believe to be primitive, dogmatic, unrealistic worldviews, and most of which is based off of religion, as according to them, religious concepts that wherever the mind fails to understand and reason, the passion overrides the mental, your mental capacity to understand the world, and replaces it with superstition, whether it be magic, ghosts, aliens, or whatever else. I don't know. I mean, maybe even aliens are can be considered more scientific. But as far as they're concerned, that's what is going on. That the basic primitive masses have basically created for themselves a higher deity to understand the things that they couldn't understand. But as time has gone on, science is supposed to replace that. The age of reason is one in which there will be no religion. But they do understand that some people, there's a spectrum of enlightenment that has occurred. And the spectrum, depending on where you're at in the spectrum, depends on your level of truth that you can handle, basically. And if you're, say, you're totally primitive, you believe in like religion full-heartedly, like in some kind of god, whether it be that, then that's the most primitive state a man can be in, and magic, you know, I mean, take it to its extreme. If somebody sees you light a lighter and they're a primitive person, they don't understand what made that happen. They think you just shot flames out of your thumb. To them, that's the most primitive state of man. But I don't think that there's anybody like that today. I think pretty much every human being in the world understands the concept of fire, so they're not going to be dazzled by it. But this gives you an example of the extremity, all the way to the extreme that you look at everything in a purely physical, reasonable understanding of what the world is, which is, in their opinion, science. That you understand what actually created the fire, and there is no primitiveness to you. There's no need for creating superstition to make sense of your worldview. So, because there's so many variations in between, there are people who understand science, but they also are religious. So what they realize is that that you can't expect, they believe that there's only a true elect that are capable of understanding these concepts, that are truly educated and reasonable people whose reasoning or intellectual knowledge capacities have surpassed the average person, and that those people's intellectual properties are what is, well, how to explain this? I'm having trouble with words here. That those people's intellectual capacity makes them the necessity for rulership. They're the ones who should rule over the rest. But because of the other people out there who have differentiating religious viewpoints, because you have people who are from one region, they believe in Islam, and people from another region who believe in Judaism, and other people who believe in Christianity, and they're all at war with one another, that there is the need, the necessity for a replacement religion. A religion that will fulfill the desires of the primitive person's heart by giving them the ideas and the concepts that comfort them in their primitive state, but that will merge them together. But they can't just produce a new religion out of nowhere. They know that. They can't just produce a new religion. Anyone can produce a new religion. You can get some followers, but you're not going to get people to convert. The only way to do that is to create a religion that merges the religions together into a new religion where there will be no conflict. And they believe that this is part of the accomplishments that they have to do in order to bring about this utopian world vision that they have, this thing they call the Great Work, the ultimate revelation of Freemasonry and what it's really all about. And when you hear me say this, I'm sure you understand that if they look at things from this perspective, what would you call them? Yes, they use religious terminology, because you got to understand, like I said earlier, that the purpose of Freemasonry is to indoctrinate and to bring people into a state of enlightenment. If you're not already there, if you're in your primitive or crude state, like they were talking about the rough ashlar, if you're still a rough ashlar, so to speak, and you've been plucked from the quarry, and you're being chiseled down slowly and gradually through this process and bringing you into your perfect state, some of them who go through this process will not be able to let go of their superstition. And for them, they have a religion, and it's called the religion of the mystery schools. Okay? For the really, truly elect, the ones who are capable of comprehending the real essence of the mystery teachings, the ones who can see the connections and draw the lines and see the clear picture is that there is no God. And from that is born a whole plethora of philosophic intellectual concepts. Okay? Now, I'm going off the edge here, but I'm going to get into things in a little bit. And I'm building a base here, because I'm going to take you through an initiation. If you listen to this show, you are going to get a straight-up initiation into Freemasonry. I'm going to take you through each degree. I'm going to post on my website all the things that they give to their people, all the secret words, and I'm going to read through the texts that I have here that they use as guidance to understand these concepts, and you are literally going to be initiated. And in this process, I'm hoping that what you'll do is you'll come to see, not the truth that they, you know, I'm seeing the truth, but not the truth that they're teaching, that the one that they believe to be true. My goal is to teach you what they believe so you can understand the truth about the way they view you and the average person in society. It's very important to understand this. There is no way you're going to defeat a philosophic or political concept such as the New World Order if you don't understand where it comes from. and I believe that there's a battle raging on, and we are losing the battle. I'm telling you. You think Zeitgeist is bad? There's going to be a lot more of those movies coming out. And I can tell you right now, because there's no people who are as open-minded, as pessimistic about the average person, or sees themselves as being in the know, like the Illumined Ones, the Freemasons, or the Mystery Cults, like the conspiracy movement. There's a very they see you as almost being someone who is almost ready to accept the truth, with one exception, that you're still clinging to primitive emotional characteristics, things like justice and peace and love and things like that. But they believe through a proper education, which they are delivering to you in the form of infiltrating the movement, to teach you. They're going to teach you. And they're going to teach these concepts. And some of you are going to jump on the bandwagon, and some of you are not. I would venture to guess, 20 years, 30 years down the line, 90% of the people I know right now who claim to be against the New World Order will be right on the wagon. I will bet that. I'll make that prediction. Let's give it 30, 35 years. Once you receive a proper education, let's see if you're still clinging to these ideas, and you're still trying to, or you're still at least professing to be against the New World Order, while maybe even while helping it along. I mean, that's what I see happening today with a lot of the people who are speaking in the so-called movement. But that's what I'm talking about. People don't know what they're up against, and therefore they cannot fight it. Because the fight is not happening on a physical plane. It's happening in the minds and the hearts of the people. And these guys are winning. Their philosophies are being externalized to the public. So we need to understand what their concepts are. But before I can go through and initiate, I have to go through and set some groundwork. And this is what this is all about. First of all, I want to break down, or the next couple shows probably, I'm going to break down misconceptions about Freemasonry or the mystery cults. Now, let me just say this. We're going through Freemasonry, specifically. Okay? Only because Freemasonry has a very established recipe. It's not the only one, though. There's plenty of other mystery cults out there. Freemasonry just happens to be the oldest, and it happens to be the most detailed. There are other ones, but I think Freemasonry has in it most of the original teachings. A lot of these other groups are kind of so-so mystery cults. They haven't really, I don't know. You'll see as time goes on. I don't know how to explain it at this point, but you'll see. For proper education, go through the most brainwashing process. This is Freemasonry. And before we can go into this, I need to lay the foundation, break down misconceptions about it, get you to understand some base points. Because my goal is not to deceive you. I don't want to initiate you and then you go join Freemasonry thinking, oh, it's all good. See, they got a good purpose and everything. Because, I mean, I think it's pretty ridiculous. And I think that there's a tendency for people to want to make boogeymen out of the people that they have differentiating world views with. And the boogeymen, they want to think that these people are just pure evil. Luciferian worshiping, want to destroy everybody but themselves, and blah, 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 and it can go on and on forever. That's the creation of a boogeyman. I'm not about that. I'm not trying to tell you. I'm telling you what I'm learning from them, and take it or leave it. I have my arguments against Freemasonry. I'm sure as hell going to present them when the time is right. But in the meantime, until my arguments are pretty much null and void until I can explain, or unless you can totally understand what I'm saying about those arguments. You know, and I've said this before, and you can, let's go back and listen to my interviews with the Freemasons. What does it boil down to when it's all said and done? Is that, yes, they agree that they're teaching something. Yes, they agree that I'm right about what they're teaching. And yes, they agree that their method is deceptive. But it's okay because they believe it's the truth. And so, hey, the ends justifies the means. If it means deceiving you, to them, it's okay to do. So, that being said, let's get into some stuff here. Now, I'm not that organized. I wish I was, but I'm not. So, bear with me. And just for a heads up, don't bother calling in. I will eventually maybe take calls towards the end if I run out of time. Or if I run out of material to go through, which I doubt I will, but say I do. And I'm going through this new system for receiving calls. So, I guess it does not alert me. I have to constantly pay attention. But being that I'm reading through books and just talking, don't bother calling in because I ain't going to see it. But when I do invite you to call in, I'll pay attention, and hopefully, if I miss you, I'm sorry. I'm still new to the whole process. It's a new new way of doing things, and just call back, and we'll do our best to get you on the air. Now let's start with this idea about Lucifer. Now, I'm not going to go through and give you a full-on education. My goal is to lead you down a path. If you're too lazy to get off your ass and do the research yourself, don't bother even listening, honestly, because I'm not gonna hold your hand through every single thought process. There's so much that goes into this, and if I went through it piece by piece and held your hand through everything, it would basically take the rest of my life to do. I'm not gonna do that. I am gonna point you in some directions, and you're welcome to go and research it. You know, I'm not going to go through everything. I'm just going to give you some pointers, and I'm hoping that if you're interested in a topic, you'll actually go and do the research. Let's start with Lucifer. Why is Freemasonry use Lucifer so frequently? What does it mean? Well, if you'll do some research, you will find out that Lucifer is the only Latin word in the translated Bible. It was a word that was kept Latin, but it was originally not a name. It was not a noun. It was an adjective. Okay? It was meant to describe something or someone. The light bearer or the morning star. What does that mean? If you look at it, if you get into the research, scholars have agreed that this doesn't actually represent a person. And actually, several scholars have even come forth and put out a proclamation saying that Christianity as a whole needs to adopt this idea, because they have actually created a deity out of a word that was not translated into English. It has nothing to do with a deity. And any basic research can teach that. Now, some people will argue, but though it's a waste of time if they do any real research into it. The scholars have agreed that it is a mistranslation to a degree. It's not a mistranslation. It's an untranslated part of the Bible. It's not a noun. It's an adjective. And it's probably describing what was being talked about prior to that quote in Isaiah, and that's the only time Lucifer shows up in the Bible, by the way, that prior to that, it was talking about a king of Babylon. Now, the king of Babylon supposedly was a king who wanted to be in the seat of God's throne. He wanted to have God's power and wanted to rule. And from what I understand, everything else that you understand about the context of the use of the word Lucifer is correct, except for applying it to some kind of supernatural deity outside of the king of Babylon doesn't work, because that's not what it means. Lucifer is not a person. Understanding that fact, and you can do your research. I'm not going to go through and do it for you, but it's not hard to find out. There's plenty of resources out there about it. Now, understanding that Lucifer is a mistranslation, let's take into consideration what Christians have done with that mistranslation or untranslated version of the Bible. They have literally created, in some cases, depends on what person you listen to or whatever, but most of Christianity as a whole, the majority of which has adopted the idea that this Lucifer creature is either Satan himself, an agent of Satan, or perhaps another name, or what do you call it, a higher being than Satan. I have heard all three versions of that. Obviously, all three are false, because Lucifer is not a noun. It was not a name. It was an adjective. It was a descriptive term used to describe something in the Bible. And if you can argue what that is, I think it was probably talking about the king of Babylon in Isaiah. So being that that's the case, what does that mean? Better yet, let's think about what Albert Pike means when he talks about it. And I'll read that quote here in a second. But first, let's read a quote from The History of Magic by Eliphas Levi, considered one of the foremost occult magic books available. Now this is on page 161, under the Divine Synthesis and Realization of Magia. According to the Kabbalist, the true name of Satan is Jehovah reversed. For Satan is not a black god, but the negation of deity. Now, the only reason I'm going to stop here and say something about that is because we're going to read this a couple more times during this teaching. The negation of deity. He is not a black god, but the negation of deity. Satan is Jehovah's name reversed. What he's talking about there is a concept that we'll get into called dualism. Dualism is a root understanding of theology according to the occult. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. He is the personification of atheism and idolatry. Opposite sides of the spectrum, eh? One represents literally a visible deity, God, and the other one represents quite the opposite. Atheism or even idolatry. But make sure you pay attention to the fact that he said atheism. The devil is not a personality for initiates, but a force created without a good object, though it can be applied to evil. It is really the instrument of liberty. They represented this force, which presides over the physical generation, under the mythical figure of the horn god Pan. And hence comes the goat of the Sabbath, brother of the old serpent, the light bearer, or Phosphorus, converted by poets into the false Lucifer of legend. The false Lucifer of legend. Think about that for a second. Let's get into morals and dogma. Sorry, I gotta find it. Okay, I'm having a little trouble finding it, but I will find it, so bear with me. I have all these marks all over this book from quotes. It's ridiculous. And I think I might even have lost the one that has the Lucifer quote, which is probably the most used quote out of this book. Looks like my tab here fell out, so I might have to come back to that quote. Because I like to read it. I could get it off the internet, but I like to read the whole thing and not just a part of it. Because if you read only part of it, you only get a partial understanding. You don't get the context. Okay, here we go. Found it. This is almost, I would say, almost a plagiarism of Levi. Okay? Now, they always say, oh, Albert Pike was a Freemason, but Eliphas Levi wasn't really a Freemason, and he wasn't really representative of Masonic teachings, and they'll sometimes even put him down a little bit. What they don't get is that a lot of what Albert Pike said was basically from Levi, Eliphas Levi, and his real name was Louise E. Constant. So, here's the quote. The apocalypse is, to those who receive the 19th degree, the apotheosis of the sublime faith, which ascribes to God alone, and despises all the pomps and works of Lucifer. Now, granted, this is a degree, and he's making that statement there based on the degree. It has nothing to do with what he actually believes. It has to do with what the person in that degree should believe. Okay? Because it's not a full revelation of the truth at this point. But it gives hints. Your job is to investigate and read between the lines. Let's see what the hint is. Lucifer, the light bearer. Emphasis on light bearer. Strange and mysterious a name given to a spirit of darkness. Lucifer, the son of the morning. So there he is. He's emphasizing the distinction between what the word actually means and what it's perceived to be. Lucifer is perceived to be a creature of darkness, but his name literally means the light. Is it he who bears the light, and with its splendors intolerable, blinds feeble, sensual, and selfish souls? So basically saying that his light is so bright, in fact, that it actually blinds the feeble, the sensual, and the selfish souls. Who do you think he's referring to? Well, he'll give you a hint in just a second. Doubt it not, for traditions are full of divine revelations and inspiration. And inspiration is not of one age, nor of one creed. Plato and Philo were also were inspired. Okay, so now he basically says and makes it clear that there's no inspiration of a single religion. That there's several inspirations from all the different religions. This is a direct... he's alluding to Christianity, specifically. But you're supposed to read between the lines here. If you could, if you just read through that and you didn't actually research what Lucifer meant and followed his prompt, his prompts when he actually emphasized light bearer. Let's look at the what did he emphasize? Lucifer, the word in capitals, the light bearer. Emphasis on light bearer. Strange and mysterious a name given to the spirit of darkness. Lucifer, the son of the morning. Is it he, emphasis on he, who bears the light and with its splendors intolerable blinds feeble and selfless and sensual souls? Doubt it not. So basically, the thing about this you have to understand is that the purpose of Freemasonry is to be a guide. It's an educational path. And if you choose to take it, you can learn what they want to teach you. But a lot of people just join, they look into the different the stuff, they'll do a little bit of tinkering around, but they don't do any actual reading. Now granted, I've said this before, Freemasonry is less applicable today because nowadays you can receive the teaching of science and this the comparative religion concept of Freemasonry in colleges. I mean, they're teaching it at a university level. I took a comparative religions course and I was blown away. He taught it almost exactly the way Freemasonry does. Except for he did more of a focus on the major world religions with small emphasis on the minor religions because that's what the class required him to do. But Freemasonry does the opposite. It puts an emphasis on the smaller cult-like religions between all the different major religions to try, because the point is to try to make you look at the connections between things like Zoroastrianism and the Book of Revelations in the Bible. It wants you to make that connection because they're building a history for you. They're building a lesson. They're saying that this is where this comes from. And ultimately, when you trace it back, the conclusion you're supposed to come to is that this all comes from a form of ancient paganism. And being that it comes from a form of ancient paganism, what good is there in believing in religion at all? It was a primitive concept of man to try to understand his world, and it has grown since then. Now, we talked about the concept of dualism. Now, I'm taking this from Wikipedia because I thought that they... I don't like the quote from Wikipedia usually, but they, when they do a good job, or somebody did a good job, or maybe several people did a good job, they do a good job. What can you say? Sometimes they can put things ways I can't, and so it works. Now, under the concept of under the topic of dualism, and please, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but take the time to go to Wikipedia or just to Google in general and type in dualism and learn the concept of dualism. It's fundamental to understanding where they're getting to. They are teaching you based off the concept of dualism. Now, though dualism is an abstract concept and it can mean multiple things, there is a specific concept that they're focusing on. And I'll tell you that in a little bit, but first, we have to go down their little educational path here. Dualism denotes a state of two parts, hence dual. The word's origin is the Latin duo, two. The term dualism was originally coined to denote the co-eternal binary opposition, a meaning that has been preserved in metaphysical and philosophical duality discourse, but has been diluted in general usage. Now, to get into the different types of dualism, we have moral dualism. That's not the one I'm talking about. Then we have ditheism or bitheism. That is the one we're talking about. And then they have in Eastern mysticism, ditheism and bitheism in Eastern mysticism. Mind, matter, and mind-body dualism. It's philosophy. That is born of the philosophy of ditheism and bitheism. The philosophy came after the religious concept. When they were breaking down religion and trying to understand it, and theologians were philosophizing to a degree about religion, trying to understand it, in the past, they came to some understandings about it, which I believe is taught in Freemasonry, and then out of that came the philosophic concepts, and we'll get into those. Consciousness, matter, dualism. they talk about that on a surface level because they relate when they get into the different religious contexts. The religion aspect also brings up aspects of dualism. And it's funny because if you look at it from the perspective, like I said, there's multiple layers of understanding. If you get into the understanding that that dualism, dietheism and bitheism, is the base concept. Born from that is the specific type of dualism in Eastern mysticism and on philosophy that concerns itself with understanding it on a purely philosophic level. But when you get into just analyzing it and you're giving a name to it, they have, you know, terminology and reference. And a lot of people who use the terminology don't really know what it means or where it came from because they don't study the where it comes from. They just use it to describe what they believe to be the abstract sense. And that is the mind-matter or the consciousness-matter dualism. So let's get into, let me just read dietheism, bitheism so you can understand that. In theology, dualism may also refer to bitheism or duotheism or ditheism. Although ditheism slash bitheism imply moral dualism, they are not equivalent. Ditheism, bitheism implies at least two gods, while moral dualism does not imply any theism, theos equals God, whatsoever. Both bitheism and ditheism imply a belief in two equally powerful gods with complementary properties. However, while bitheism implies harmony, ditheism implies rivalry and opposition, such as between good and evil. For example, a ditheistic system would be one in which one god is creative and the other is destructive. In a bitheistic system, one god could be male and the other female, or duotheism. However, bitheistic and ditheistic principles are not always so easily contrastable. For instance, in a system where one god is representative of summer and drought, and the other of winter and rain slash fertility, for example, the mythology of Persephone, Marconism, a nominally Christian sect, but denounced for it as a heresy, held that the Old and New Testaments were the work of two opposing gods. Both were first principles, but of different religions. Sorry, I'm not reading too well tonight. Doing my best I can. Okay. I don't read good out loud. All right, so this is the difference between ditheism and bitheism. What I am referring to here is ditheism. When I say dualistic principle, when it's referred to in Freemasonry, almost always they're referring to the ditheistic concept. Ditheism is not a contrast per se. It doesn't say that there's two opposing forces doing battle with one another. It just basically is saying that there's two different things. Period. Where dualism, when it's used, is typically to relate to this idea that there's two opposing forces or bitheistic concepts. I hope this isn't confusing you, but it's essential to understanding what we're about to read. Now, let's see. Now, let's get into moral dualism. Moral dualism is a product of the theology of dualism. But before I read that, let's read something else here because I don't want to confuse you anymore. This is a quote from Morals and Dogma, Albert Pike's book. And I'm going to read at length here. And there's going to be a lot in here, but I want you to focus on the emphasis of this text, okay? And if you've heard my show before, this shouldn't be confusing to you. You should understand my perceptions about what they teach, and it's going to blow your mind what I'm about to read, because this is literally the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 paragraphs of the book. This is his conclusion. This whole thing was building up to this conclusion, and this is it. So understand this. This is what he's trying to teach the people who read this and go through the ritual. And the book is literally laid out by degree, by ritual. Of that equilibrium between good and evil, and light and darkness in the world, which assures us that all is the work of the infinite wisdom and of the infinite love, and that there is no rebellious demon of evil or principle of darkness coexistent or in eternal controversy with God or the principle of light and of good. By attaining to the knowledge of which equilibrium we can, through faith, see the existence of evil, sin, suffering, and sorrow in the world is consistent with the infinite goodness as well as the infinite wisdom of the Almighty. Is that clear for you? That is exactly what I was talking about. That's the dualistic principle. Because from this dualistic principle and an understanding, they believe, of the history of religion and the understanding of how they connect to one another, do this through this dualistic principle, and I'm telling you, it's all based off of this concept, that you're going to come to the knowledge of knowing that the root of all religion, morals, passions, the things that they believe are a hindrance to true intellectual capacity, to a true humanistic worldview, is this concept right here. Sympathy, and I'm going to keep reading on. Sympathy and entropy, I can't read that word very good. Antipathy, attraction and repulsion, each a force of nature, are contraries. In the souls of men and in the universe of spheres and worlds, and from the action and opposition of each against the other, result harmony, and that movement which is the life of the universe and the soul alike. Now, I hope you caught that. They are harmony. The opposition, the dualism, the forces at war with one another do what? Create harmony. Okay? Well, I'm going to get to in a little bit why that's important. This is a very fundamental concept to understanding what these people are teaching. They are not antagonists of each other. The force that repels a planet from the sun is no more an evil force than that which attracts the planet towards the central luminary. Okay? So they're saying that the force that repels the sun is no more evil than the one that draws it closer to the sun. There's necessities of each other. They create a harmony. Okay? For each is created and exerted by the deity, and the result is a harmonious movement of the obedient planets in their elliptic orbits, and the mathematical accuracy and unvarying regularity of their movements. Before I go on here, let's focus on something now. I'm going to go ahead and drop, and then the reason is because I don't want to keep bringing up hints and hope that you're just going to get it. I want to say it, and then I'm going to bring up these quotes so you can see that's what they're saying. And what I'm saying is that the idea that there is two opposing forces in the world doing battle with each other to them is not acceptable. That two opposing forces are necessary. In order for there to be love, there has to be the opposite. And let me say that again. In order for something to exist in the entire sphere of understanding, there has to be an opposite. If there was no opposite or something to contrast, it would not exist because there'd be no sense to define it. It would, you know what I'm saying? What could love be without hate? If you believe hate is the opposite. Without it, love would just be. And therefore, it would have no defining characteristics and therefore could not exist. That's the concept. And being that love and hate, or good and bad, or light and dark, are all necessities to the actual existence of items within the world that each complement each other and help allow each other to exist, that there it could not be ultimately a good. That they have to exist with each other. You can't focus on just good and treat bad like it's a horrible thing and you want to get rid of it, because bad is what makes good. Are you understanding the concept here? The entire purpose, the whole philosophy, when they break it down, they're getting into the concepts of dualism. And they're building on a philosophy to teach you this idea. It's kind of like the yin and the yang. That's where it supposedly roots from. They believe the yin and the yang is born of this dualistic concept, this principle of light and dark that complement one another, not against one another. Therefore, they reject any religion that teaches principles that are opposed to this reality, including Christianity, which believes that in good and the God of love and that Satan is bad. They refuse to accept that. Now, getting to the principle of Lucifer, they say Lucifer, the sun bearer, the light bearer. Now, we know that light is representative of knowledge, hence the word enlightenment, right? And Freemasonry is supposed to enlighten you. So the term light is used frequently in reference to gain of knowledge and reason and understanding. And Lucifer represents the light. So to them, symbolically, not literally, because they refuse to accept the idea that there is two opposing factions against each other, and therefore they refuse to even believe that Lucifer is even a bad creature, if a creature at all. And I don't think they believe that that Lucifer is a deity at all. Which people misquote the crap out of them because they don't understand their concepts. Now that Lucifer is actually the light bearer or the bringer of knowledge, the bringer of light and enlightenment. And symbolically, now why do they say that? Not because they care whether or not they make Lucifer into a creature of light or because they worship him, but because Lucifer is a mistranslation in the Bible a word that was not translated, that was made into a creature of darkness because of people's superstition and fear. Ignorance, superstition, and fear. You're going to hear me say that a lot because that's what the three ruffians represent in the first 3 degrees. Ignorance, superstition, and fear. Now, the ignorance, superstition, and fear, that the primitive person has prevents them from being able to understand the concept of Lucifer. And even if I tried to explain this to a church gathering, I guarantee it would be met with a backlash. They're not interested in knowing the truth. They're just hanging on to their doctrine, their dogma. Okay? Lucifer is a embodiment. It's a symbolic symbol of worship against or for the sake of knowledge, fearless seeking of knowledge. Lucifer represents ignorance to them. Lucifer represents the truth, the light, the knowledge that the average primitive person would refuse because they're too superstitious. It has become a symbol of worship because it's a symbol of their ability to understand things through knowledge and education that people could not handle because of their superstition and ignorance. Aspects of their primitive state, their lack of enlightenment. They're just stones in the quarry. Now, so when you understand these dualistic principles, you understand what they're getting to. Now, they never, ever, 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 ever write it down in a line. This is what we believe. Why? Because they believe that if you're not primitive, you'll get it. And if you're too primitive, you will not get it. You will not learn. And so they don't conceal the truth, per se. They just don't speak it. Because as far as they're concerned, even if they were to speak the truth, you're too primitive. You won't get it. And what will end up happening is you'll end up burning them at the stake because of your primitiveness, because of your superstition and your religious mentality. Now, you'll end up persecuting them and getting rid of the last people on this planet who they believe actually get it, the people who are further evolved. And therefore, the savages of the world will win in the battle towards evolution. Now, I'm just pausing here and there to capture my thoughts. I don't want to lose and get and say something that doesn't make sense or lose you. I hope you're getting this. This is important. You have to understand this stuff. The people who are teaching you that Lucifer is the creature that they worship doesn't know their head from their ass. They don't get it. I would venture to guess they've probably never even researched it. And what even cracks me up more is that when I talk to Freemasons and they realize that I do get some of these teachings, and trust me, I've talked to more Freemasons who don't get it than ones who do. Doesn't mean that they're not climbing the levels. I've talked to higher degree Freemasons that didn't even get the basic concepts. Didn't mean that they couldn't climb the levels, it just means they didn't get it. They didn't learn the lessons. No big deal. Just because you're a 33rd degree doesn't mean they tell you any secret. You're still supposed to get it. But the people who are teaching this stuff you know, some of them, and I mean, some of the Freemasons I've talked to who do start to get these concepts, and there's various levels of those who get it, you know, some of them really get it. And when they know I know what I'm talking about, they trip out on me pretty much. They're always trying to get me to join, you know? And I'm saying that they laugh at people who teach Freemasonry. They think it's a big joke because they listen to these guys teach, and to them, all they're doing is showing how primitive they are. And they'll go ahead and let you talk. They don't care. You can talk yourself into a hole because all you're doing is displaying your primitiveness, your inability to understand, the fact that you're unenlightened and you're basically stupid, incapable of comprehending the true teachings. Now, they mask the true teachings. They allude to things. They hint at things. They bring up philosophic concepts, and they bring up history, and they bring up all these obscure religions, and they make connections between things, but they never tell you why, because you're supposed to figure that out. So when people are quoting them, they're reading this, they're developing religions based upon doctrine that they don't even get. They're actually literally believing that these people are teaching a religion or a religious concept. And they go off and they teach based on religion. While the people who truly get it, who always mask it in religion, but the ones who understand know, they can dissect what's being said versus the covering, the bullshit layer. Let's read some more. Oh, great. I have my phone in here. I didn't even know it. We'll just ignore that. Okay, I got picked up. Let me get rid of that stupid thing. I'll be right back. I'm going to get rid of this damn phone. All right. So that won't happen again. I have a phone that announces who's calling when they call, so that wouldn't be good. I don't think people want their shit being announced over the air. All right. Let's continue reading. Now, please, whenever I quote these people, please dissect the religious mumbo-jumbo, the rhetoric, from what they're actually saying. Try to read between the lines. I'm not saying that you have to believe that I'm right. I'm just saying that you have to take into consideration what I'm saying when you hear it, so that you can see my perspective. And then, because when people read this, they always go, man, these guys just don't make sense. Or they get into it and they start trying to understand it, and they start developing all these weird mystical beliefs. And they start talking like they know, they're throwing out these random religious terms like they know what they're talking about. Like somehow they're enlightened and they're teaching you what's up, and they're enlightening you, right? But don't do that. Look at it from a purely humanistic standpoint and understand real purpose, if I'm right, what they're doing. Of that equilibrium between authority and individual action, which constitutes free government, by settling on immutable foundations, liberty and with obedience to law, equality with subjection to authority, and fraternity with subordination to the wisest and the best, and the equilibrium between the active energy of the will of the present, expressed by the vote of the people, and the passive stability and permanence of the will of the past, expressed in constitutions of government, written or unwritten, and in the laws and customs, gray with age and sanctified by time, as precedence and authority, which is represented by the arch resting on the two columns, Jachin and Boaz, that stand at the portals of the temple, builded by wisdom, on one of which masonry sets the celestial globe, symbol of the spiritual part of our composite nature, and on the other, the terrestrial globe, the symbol of the material part. The material and the spiritual. One represents. And which one does the globe rest on? Jachin and Boaz. I'm going to read it again. Jachin and Boaz that stand at the portals of the temple, builded by wisdom. Okay, this is the entrance to the temple. It's supported by two pillars. And they call those two pillars Jachin and Boaz. On one of which masonry sets the celestial globe, symbol of the spiritual part of our composite nature, and on the other, the terrestrial globe, symbol of the material part. The globe is resting on the material part, not the spiritual. Why? Because some people, now when they say spiritual, trust me, they're not referring to actual spirit. They're referring to superstition. And finally, of the equilibrium possible in ourselves, and which Masonry incessantly labors to accomplish in its initiates, and demands of its adepts and princes, else unworthy of their titles, between the spiritual and divine and the material and human and man, between the intellect, reason, and moral sense on one side, and the appetites and passions on the other. See what I'm saying? They're comparing the two. One's representative of your primitive appetites and passions. The other one's rested on intellect, reason, and a moral sense. Now, I talked about this before. Their idea of morality does not come from the heart. It comes from their brain. And we'll talk about that again in detail, but not now. From which result the harmony and beauty of a well-regulated life. Now, they believe that you need to control your passions. They're not saying that they're without them. They just think that they're more without them than the average person. They think the average person is ruled by them. Let's read on. Which possible equilibrium proves to us that our appetites and our senses also are forces given unto us by God. Now, when they say God, they mean nature, because they don't believe in God. And you'll believe that as I get on and I read more and more. Okay, for purposes of good and not the fruits of malignancy of a devil, to be tested, to be detested, mortified, and if possible, rendered inert and dead, that they are given to us to be the means by which we shall be strengthened and incited to great and good deeds, and are to be wisely used and not abused, to be controlled and kept within due bounds by reason and moral sense. Okay, my daughter is going nuts out here. I'm going to go ahead and play a song just to deal with her for a second. I'll be back and I'll reread this. And yeah. if you heard, but my daughter was in the background screaming her head off. So I had to go take care of her real quick. I have my own studio, but it's not like a sealed studio. It's just a room, basically, with equipment in it. If you want to call that a studio. So anyways, yes, let's get back onto the topic at hand. Which possible equilibrium proves to us that our appetites and senses also are forces given unto us by God for purposes of good and not the fruits of the malignancy of the devil, to be detested, mortified, and if possible rendered inert and dead, that they are given to us to be the means by which we shall be strengthened and incite to great and good deeds, and are to be wisely used and not abused, to be controlled and kept within due bounds by the reason and moral sense, to be made useful instruments and servants, and not permitted to become the managers and masters, using our intellect and reason as base instruments for their gratification. In other words, your emotions are not supposed to control you. Your reason is supposed to control your emotions. The difference between a primitive man and an enlightened man is the enlightened man is ruled by reason. The primitive man is ruled by passions, instincts, if you will. That's what this whole thing is about. The book is called Morals and Dogma. And I heard somebody the other day say that morals and dogma is what it's all about. No, it's not about morals and dogma. It's a distinction between morals and dogma. Morals, he says, are a characteristic, can only be truly characterized through your intelligence and your reasoning capacities. Dogma is what you have that you call morals, but they're really just dogma. They come from a religion. And he even goes so far as to say that often, if not most of the time, they're totally rendered useless. Real morals are rendered useless to dogma. Dogma makes people kill each other. Dogma causes people to hate others or believe that they're, you know, whatever. And he uses all these examples about all the things that dogma does. But reason is different. Reason is where true morals come from. Let me give you a scenario for an example. Let's see. You know that you want to create a utopian society where there's no more wars, there's peace, there's prosperity for all that stuff, yada yada. Utopian vision, right? But you know that other countries are not going to go along with your utopian vision and the people are not ready for it. So what do you have to do to prepare these people? Well, first, you have to apprehend governments. And put in charge people who are truly enlightened and able to understand these concepts to rule. Or you'll have tyrants ruling over the world. And yes, you may have to kill people in order to accomplish this. But it's a means to an end. It's a moral end that you're going towards. So the end justifies the means. It doesn't matter. It's not death itself that is a moral impurity. Killing is not a moral impurity. The moral impurity is somebody who refuses to kill but lets society degrade down to extinction. So their idea of morals, true morals, comes from your reasoning abilities, your ability to say, okay, it's bad to kill and we don't want to kill. But you know what? There's too many people on this planet. We don't have enough natural resources to continue functioning in a really efficient manner, so some have to go for the greater good. Hey, they're going to die someday anyways. That's what I'm talking about. That's the difference between what they consider to be true morals and dogma. Dogma would say, thou shall not kill, and they refuse to do it. There's an important understanding, because this is why they do a lot of the things that they do. And as we get into the various initiation topics and the different philosophies, you're going to see this come to light. This is exactly how they view the world. So let me read that one more time. Which possible equilibrium proves to us that our appetites and senses also are forces given unto us by God or nature for the purposes of good and not the fruits of the malignancy of a devil, to be detested, mortified, and if possible rendered inert and dead? They're not supposed to be that. That they are given to us to be a means by which we shall be strengthened and incite to great and good deeds. and are to be wisely used and not abused, to be controlled and kept within due bounds by reason and a moral sense, to be made useful instruments and servants, and not permitted to become managers and masters, using our intellect and reason as a base instrument for their gratification. If they become masters, you start using your reason, your reasoning abilities, to get what your body wants, what your physical desires want, instead of the other way around. And this equilibrium teaches us, above all, to reverence ourselves as immortal souls, and to have respect and charity for others, who are even such as we are, partakers with us of the divine nature, lighted by a ray of the divine intelligence, struggling like us toward the light, capable like us of progress upward toward perfection, and deserving to be loved and pitied. Some read into that one. I'm sure it's pretty simple. But never to be hated nor despised. To be aided and encouraged in this life struggle, and not to be abandoned nor left to wander in the darkness alone. Still less to be trampled upon in our own efforts to ascend. From the mutual action and reaction of each of these pairs of opposites and contraries results that which with them forms the triangle. To all the ancient sages, the expressive symbol of the deity, as from Osiris and Isis, Har-Ori, and the master of light and life and the creative word. At the angles of one stand, symbolically, the three columns that support the lodge, itself a symbol of the universal wisdom, power, and harmony, or beauty. Universe, wisdom, power, harmony. One of these symbols found on the tracing board of the apprentice degree, and I'll go through the degrees, like I said, and bring out the tracing boards, teaches this last lesson of Freemasonry. It is the right-angled triangle, representing man, as a union of the spiritual and the material, of the divine and human, the base measured by the number 3. The number of the triangle represents the deity and the divine. The perpendicular measured by the number 4, the number of the square, represents the earth, the material, and the human. And the hypotenuse, measured by 5, represents the nature which is produced by the union of the divine and human. The soul and the body, the squares 9 and 16 of the base and perpendicular added together producing 25. The square root whereof is 5, the measure of the hypotenuse. Now, I know this is a little hard to understand. Ignore the numbers. The numbers are something else we'll get into once we get past the basic philosophy. Now, he's basically saying that the triangle represents the combination between the human and the spiritual. That is the combination between your primitive characteristics and your enlightened characteristics. The yin and the yang, the good and the bad, yada yada. It's basically all the same thing. So let's read on. And as in each triangle of perfection, one is three and three are one, so man is one, though of a double nature. And he attains the purpose of his being only when two natures that are in him are in just equilibrium. And his life is a success only when it, too, is a harmony and beautiful, like the great harmonies of God and the universe. Such, my brother, is the true word of the Master Mason, such the true royal secret, which makes possible and shall at length make real the holy empire of the true Masonic brotherhood. Then it says in Latin, Gloria Dei est celar verbum. Now, is there any part of you right now that is questioning whether or not this is a dualistic principle? How many times does he have to talk about the two opposing forces that complement each other in balance? Dualism, the yin and the yang concept. Now, this Latin word, Gloria Dei est celare verbum literally means, and it comes from the untranslated version of the Bible in Latin, but it comes from Proverbs chapter 25. It is the glory of God to conceal the word, and the glory of kings to, or the glory of God to conceal the word. That's it. It is the glory of God to conceal the word. Because they don't ever give you the true word, because it's lost. And you're getting replacement words all the way through this process to help an educational path, but you never actually learn it. It's kind of funny. Now, let's understand, let's read this whole thing so you can understand it a little bit more deeper. Why would he pick this one verse in the Bible, other than the fact that it says to conceal the word, which is the lost word of Freemasonry? And they always say it. It's funny, because whenever you see a Freemason quote, they always say, it is the glory of God to conceal a thing. Doesn't say a word. And I think that maybe it's a mistranslation thing, or it's a translation issue, but I think that what they're talking about, a thing, is that they're replacing the word with a thing, because the word, they don't want to allude to anything. I think that's what it is. They don't want you to understand that concept. It's part of them hiding, I think, what they're really all about. Who knows? That's just speculation, though. So let's read the whole verse. It is the glory of God to conceal the word, and the glory of kings to search out the speech. The heaven above and the earth beneath and the heart of kings is unsearchable. Take away rust from silver, and there shall come forth a most pure vessel. Take away wickedness from the face of the king, and his throne shall be established with justice. Now, if you haven't seen anything else here, if you know anything about it, you'll know the term as above, so below. The heaven above and the earth below. And people are always trying to get into what that means, and I'm telling you, as above, so below means as it is in heaven, so it be on earth. Utopian society. That's what it's about. It's about the new Atlantis. And that's the end of the book. That's how it ends off. So, I'm sure there's a lot to be gained from that. Now, let me get into another thing here. Now, being that there's opposing principles in nature, and opposing principles that we have to have in order for them to complement each other, for one to exist, the other has to exist. Right? Being that that's the case, what does that mean? It means that there's no need to have them do battle with each other. What we need is balance. The balance creates a concept known as monism. Monism is a philosophic view that holds that there is unity in a given field of inquiry, where this is not to be expected. Thus, some philosophers may hold that the universe is really just one thing, despite its many appearances and diversities. Or theology may support the view that there is one God, with many manifestations in different religions. Monism. Monism comes from a concept born of dualism. Now, I'm telling you right now, there's not a whole lot of philosophy about this stuff. You're not going to go to a class at college and really learn in this in depth. What you have to do is just start reading. And, you know, I would recommend getting Morals and Dogma and researching the hell out of it. I literally sat next to that book, and I sat next to my encyclopedias and went through, and there was so much I didn't understand. By the time I was done, I understood it perfectly, because I made sure that not a single word went by that I did not understand. And it advanced my knowledge significantly. I can say if it wasn't for my diligence in research, I probably wouldn't have gotten it. Instead of just reading it and trying to understand it to the best of my ability, I literally used dictionaries and encyclopedias, and I literally translated his words to mean exactly what he's saying, minus all the fancy talk, so that I could sit there and read it and understand what it was saying. And when I was reading it, I mean, it was as clear as day what he was saying. Although there was an aspect to it that you had to capture, because you have to read between the lines. He alludes to a lot of things, but he doesn't just flat out say it. Let me see here. Sorry. Now, I want, if you're interested, please take a look, go online, and look up the word Kircher, and hit images on Google. And you're going to see a number of images pop up. Kircher's a very popular artist that did a lot of occult renderings. And if you look into occult art, look up alchemy and mysticism and hermetic art, and go through and look at it. And what you're going to see over and over again are the principles in light and darkness, over and over and over. I don't think I've seen a single one, hardly, that doesn't have in some way reflected that principle. That's why you have the hermaphrodite gods, the man and woman, the monism, but appearances are dualistic, right? I hope this is all making sense. And if it's not, please send me an email or call in a little bit, and I'll try to clarify some of what I'm saying. My email is admin, at truthlovefreedom.org. Now, let's open up Manly P. Hall. Now, the thing you got to understand is that a lot of people try to say, like lately, you know, this whole, the whole movement of the Zeitgeist has created a stir, and it's been going around now. Alex Jones is going around talking about how Zeitgeist is basically theosophy, and so on and so forth. No, it's not entirely true, because theosophy is almost entirely a translation of the occult texts that are full of superstition. They are full of it. And Manly P. Hall is questionable. Some would think that he wasn't superstitious, and other people think that he was. He teaches as if he is, but they all teach as if they are. The difference between what you get from most Masons, especially Manly P. Hall or Elvis Levi, is that they talk about things objectively. They talk about it like this means that to this person, blah, 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 and that means that, and this and that. And you're supposed to read between the lines, where Manly P. Hall teaches it almost as if it's fact. And there's a difference. The tone means something different. And Manly P. Hall teaches this like it's an absolute fact. Either because he believes it to be true, or because he was trying to create that replacement religion I told you about earlier. The replacement religion that's going to merge all the religions together. That new religion is called the New Age. And whether or not it keeps the name the New Age or Theosophy or anything else, there's several different groups all participating in basically the same thing. Freemasons also are part of it. Like I said, the ones who don't get the real in-depth knowledge, the higher mysteries, if you will believe in the superstitious stuff, and that's okay to them, as long as it accomplishes the goals that they have. This religion does not stand in the way of their goals, where other religions do. These religions are talking about these so-called higher people, these enlightened people. They're very guru-ish, and they're okay with letting people who they believe are smarter than they are, more enlightened, rule the world. Where, on the other hand, and I'm telling you, and it's funny because I laugh, because, you know, Freemasons know a lot of stuff. If they study this stuff and they understand it, you'll be amazed at some of the stuff they'll quote. You won't talk about anything of a religious nature or context without them knowing it. They have studied all philosophies and all theologies. They know in-depth concepts, because that's what Freemasonry is all about. And there's the ones who don't get all that stuff, and they talk about things that don't make any sense. And they'll make connections that don't really connect, and they'll use data that doesn't make sense. And you can tell the difference between the ones who get it and the ones who don't. But on a theological level, on a way the worldview level, when you talk to them, they use the same verbiage. So you almost, unless you know the difference, you won't identify it. You'll think that they're the same type of person, and they're really not. The New Age types are superstitious, and what you have in this movement are people who are teaching the occult teachings in a superstitious manner. They're teaching it like it's an actual fact. And they're making connections that aren't there. And they have these really abstract philosophic concepts or theological concepts. And they've almost taken on the persona of a guru. And they're being followed by the masses of people. And it just blows my mind. Like, if anything, it's obvious that people who are studying this stuff have not really made the connection here. And that's what's most disturbing to me. That's why I want to teach it my way So hopefully that, you know, I can get the ears of people and they can listen. I have no desire to be your guru. I only have one request, and that is that you get off your ass and do your own research. Don't follow me. I'm not interested in being followed. I don't want to be leading anybody, because if I make mistakes, I'm not going to be responsible for you. Seriously. I have no desire to be a leader. I only have a desire to educate. And it's very frustrating to watch people who supposedly are in the know about the New World Order, you know, adopting beliefs and philosophies and theology that is leading to the New World Order, all the while proclaiming they're against it. It's baffling. It's so easy to research, too. It's not like the information's not available. I mean, go on to eBay now. I mean, because of the internet, the information's there. But, you know, it's a really fun religion. It's filled with riddles and mystery. You always hear them talk about mystery. When, what's her name? Acharya S. put out a video trying to debunk her debunkers or whatever and claim that, you know, that she had everything right. She said, it's a mystery. They always talk about the mystery. Because there's nothing more hypnotizing to a person than a mystery. People like mysteries. They like to try to understand things. And they feel really intelligent and bright. And they feel very confident when they think they figured out something that nobody else knows. And then you're getting, and that's what you see. It's there's a lure there. I know because I was a part of that lure for a while. But I have certain beliefs. You know, I talked about truth, love, and freedom. My beliefs led me to escape from this mentality, this hierarchical, self, you know, absorbed, I am enlightened mentality. And granted, I didn't hate anybody. I just pitied them. It's just a shame that people didn't get it. But I don't see things that way anymore. Because I believe in principles that are bigger than those ideas. It's a shame that a lot of Freemasons don't. So in my hand, I have New Age Magazine, May of 1976. I'm planning on collecting as many of these as I can, although they are kind of expensive. Now, I always talked about man becoming perfect. So you have to ask yourself, what is the perfect man? What is the perfected ashlar? What is the philosopher's stone? We talked about all this stuff on a previous show. So what is it that he's trying to do? So here's a little quote. It's on the cover, and it's from the Sovereign Grand Commander of the time. And I can't even read his signature, but you can look up his name. And it says, "We of the Scottish Rite express our optimistic belief that man is in the process of continual progress toward perfectibility." Perfectibility. Man becoming perfect. That's what they're all about. They believe in evolution. They believe that man is evolving, moving to another state, and there is coming another age, a new age, where man is going to abandon superstitious beliefs and be brought through their means into a utopian society where the primitive will adopt a religion that is more peaceful, that is absent of the moral dogmas of other religions, and it's going to be kind of a live and let live philosophy to a degree. That they're going to respect authority, and that the authority is going to lie in the hands of those who truly deserve it, the ones who would truly guide society, the ones who have the ability to understand what is happening in the world and lead mankind, and that is going to be a world government, because we can't have opposite nations. We may have the appearance of borders, but it's all going to be under one central authority, and it's going to be them. And that central authority, that the necessity for that new world order is to prevent any type of opposition. They don't want different countries going to war. And everything that they're doing right now, all these wars, are to help bring about this world utopian vision, this world government. And they believe they're doing what's to the best interest of mankind. So a few thousand, you know, a few million people have to die. A few thousand here, a few million there. It's all for the greater good. Those people would have died anyways. And if they didn't use their reasoning morals, their reasoned morals, to understand the path that man was going down, absent their control, people would have probably even ended up extinct. We would screw ourselves till we overpopulated the planet. We'd run out of food, and we'd all die. We'd pollute. We'd rape, pillage, and plunder. Kill, murder, destroy. and that's what would happen to the Earth absent of their control. That's what they believe. So the New World Order comes into a whole other perspective at that point. If you look at it from that perspective, all of a sudden, all these things that you're talking about, eugenics, the different controls over the different facets of society, they want to let you live and be free and all that good stuff, as long as it's within the boundaries of what they consider to be a reasonable way of living. And if you refuse to accept this way of living, you're going to be done away with. And the purpose of the surveillance is to monitor and make sure that there's no uprisings. They don't want the masses of ignorant people being led by an ignorant barbarian leader to destroy them. But as long as you go along with the program, they're cool with it. That's the mentality. And it's for the greater good. And if everything you read, all the political stuff, all that you read about UNESCO and all them, United Nations, and the philosophy that has developed what they're doing, you'll see that it's all based upon the same concepts, the same idea that it's for the betterment of mankind. That's what's so disturbing about it, because they're doing it thinking they're doing what's right. They're doing what's righteous and good for everybody. Let me see if I can find some more quotes here. Because once you get this understanding in your head, it's fun to just go around and read quotes. You know? Now, granted, this mentality does not come without its degree of racism. Which is why I've been so having such a hard time with the idea that they're actually letting a black man into the position of president, because they believe that black people are the most primitive of men. And because they believe in evolution, they really believe that certain races are just way behind in the evolutionary process and cannot. It would just be insane for them to give up a position like that to somebody who could use it and ignite the people to rise up against them. Now, let's see here. I'm going to go ahead and invite somebody to call in. I'm just going to go through and read some questions. I got the last 30 minutes. But you're welcome to call in. The number is 1-877-REVERE-0. 1-877-738-3730. And if you don't want to call in and you still want to ask me a question, my email is admin@truthlovefreedom.org. Now, next week, I'm going to have some friends come and hang out with me. We're going to talk about the Federal Reserve and the monetary system and how it enslaves the population by design, a subject that they're interested in because they're heading up to the End the Fed protest in San Francisco, I think the next day. So it's going to be fun. Right after that, I'm probably going to head right back in. Like, there's going to be short times when I'm going to end up leaving the topic matter and addressing other things and then coming back to it. But I'm always going to come back to this topic. I'm always going to continue the teaching, get in depth, and I'm going to go section by section by section and hopefully pound into your head this understanding, not to the point that you absolutely believe it. It's up to you to believe it. But it's just that you'll consider it. That when you hear these quotes, you listen to what everyone's teaching you, take the other position and try to understand it. And see if it's right. And I think you'll agree. I think you will. Because a lot of the quotes seem to be of that respect. Now, I'm going to kind of keep my eyes on the phone, but I'm going to, if I miss your call, just call back in again. This is another quote. Masonry, like all religions, all the mysteries, hermeticism, and alchemy, conceals its secrets from all except the adepts and sages or the elect, and uses false explanations and misinterpretations of its symbols to mislead those who deserve only to be misled, to conceal the truth, which it calls light, from them, and to draw them away from it. Truth is not for those who are unworthy or unable to receive it or would pervert it. So God himself incapacitates many men by color blindness to distinguish colors and leads the masses away from the highest truth, giving them the power to attain only so much of it as it is profitable to them to know. Giving to them the power to attain only so much of it as it is profitable for them to know. Remember what I was talking about earlier? Where are you in this line of enlightenment, in their opinion? Depends on what you believe. If that's not elitist, I don't know what is. But that's what I'm talking about. Every age has had a religion suited to its capacity. Every age. And the last age, and he goes, and what was the last age that we just came out of? What religion was suited to that age? And here he has the next paragraph. The teachers, even of Christianity, are in general the most ignorant of the true meaning of which they teach. There is no book of which so little is known as the Bible. To most who read it, it is incomprehensible as the Zohar. So Masonry jealously conceals its secrets and intentionally leads conceited interpreters astray. There is no sight under the sun more pitiful and ludicrous at once than the spectacle of the Prestons and the Webbs, not to mention the latter incarnations of the dullness and the commonplace, undertaking to explain the old symbols of Masonry, and adding to and improving them, or inventing new ones. See, he even identifies this fact, that people who try to interpret the symbols and get into the mystic aspects of it are basically making up and just drawing connections that don't exist. To the circle enclosing the central point, it is itself traced between two parallel lines, a figure purely Kabbalistic. These persons have added the superimposed Bible, and even reared on that ladder with 3 or 9 rounds, and then given a vapid interpretation of the whole, so profoundly absurd as to excite admiration. Superstitious people are absurd to these people. And it's those people who are the ones who are going around teaching, these New Agers, or even in the so-called occult or truth movement. I'm not going to name names, but you know who I'm talking about. These so-called gurus. And they'll throw out all this mystic crap at you. They have, what my friend said, they have a knowledge that's a miles wide but an inch thick. And it dazzles people, purposely. They try to pull out these obscure things as much as they can to try to dazzle you. But don't be fooled, because these Freemasons have said that the three ruffians are ignorance. Not understanding the truth. Knowledge is the only cure for ignorance. Superstition. People who have the knowledge will know that the superstition is bullshit. And will embrace reason. And the last thing is fear. Fear of departing from the idea of deities or gods. They're paralyzing factors that prevent people from growing and being willing to investigate. How many people do you know are unwilling to investigate other religions because they're afraid that they're going to lose their faith? And that's the number one thing that all religions use to try to prevent their people from going away from their religion. They use fear of something, hell, Hades, whatever. I forget what the Islamic people call it, but to try to scare you from being willing to do your research, to investigate. And that's what this is all about. Lucifer is a representation of Christian ignorance. It is their deification of their own ignorance that they are in fear of, that they actually believe is against them. That's what it represents. That is why it's a symbol of worship to them, because they're not fearful, they're not superstitious, and they're not ignorant. They know what Lucifer literally means, and they have no reason to fear it. Do you understand? They do not worship Lucifer, and anybody who tells you they do doesn't know what their head from their ass. Honestly. It's important to understand this. So what is all this for? We talked about the creating of the new man, the illumined man, the perfected Ashlar, right? And they want to create a new world government. And I gave you the idea behind why. And I gave you some of the philosophy that they believe, the dualism perspective. And based on that dualism, they have come to the conclusion that there is no need to worship any gods, and that man is in control of his own destiny. That the new age belongs to man, but the enlightened man, the one who can actually do something good with the future. That is the New World Order. And they call it the Great Work. And the Great Work is, above all things, the creation of man by himself. That is to say, the full and entire conquest which he effects of his own faculties and his future. It is, above all, the perfect emancipation of his will, which assures him the universal empire of Azoth and the domain of magnetism, that is, complete power over the universal magical agent. The magical agent, which the ancient Hermetic philosophers disguise under the name of prima materia, determines the forms of the modified substance, and the alchemists said that by means of it they could attain the transmutation of metals and the universe of universal medicine. It's science, people. They're talking about science. There is no religious aspect here. It's purely science. The numbers are about ancient math. It's all it is math. There's math, alchemy. I mean, you're talking about sacred geometry. It's math. You're talking about alchemism. It's chemistry. Talk about philosophy and religion. They have theosophy. The philosophy of religion. It's all humanistic, purely to its bone, to its core. The purpose of Freemasonry is to bring you into this understanding, to see if you can get it. And it is even proposed at one point that the mystery cults of the ancient world were perfectly aware of this fact and have been in control since the very beginning. I don't know if that's true or not. That's up to you to decide. Read more about the Ashlar. Let's go back to the Ashlar again. Let me see if I can find it. A rough ashlar is the shapeless stone which is to be prepared in order to commence the philosophical work, the great work, the philosophical work, the philosophy, and to be developed in order to change its form from a triangular to cubic. After the separation from it of its salt, sulfur, and mercury, by the aid of the square, level, plumb, and balance, and all the other Masonic implements, emphasis, which we use symbolically. Hear me put them to philosophical use, to constitute a well-proportioned edifice, through which you are to make pass the crude material, analogous, to a candidate commencing his initiation into our mysteries. When we build, we must observe all the rules and proportions, for otherwise the spirit of life cannot lodge therein. So you will build the great tower, in which is to burn the fire of the sages, or, in other words, the fire of heaven, as also the sea of the sages, in which with a sun and moon are to bathe. That is the basin of purification, in which will be the water of celestial grace, water that does not soil the hands, but purifies all leprous bodies. And he just goes on and on and on. I think I'm running out of stuff here. Feel free to call in 1-877-REVERE-0, 1-877-738-3730. Let me see. Oh. I'm working in a really small space right now. So all my equipment out, but I will get it together here in a second. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and go to a break right now. My throat's starting to hurt. I need to drink something. So I'll be back in just a second.
Scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty. My message is this.
Revere Radio Network Tampa, the worldwide home of free speech.
go ahead and invite you to call in one last time. And then I'm going to go ahead and read a quote, and I'm going to call it a night. The number is 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-738-3730. 1-877-738-3730. Make sure you call in soon, because we're running out of time here. Okay. This quote is going to be the final quote, and I think it should hit the ball out of the park about what I'm seeing, especially in terms of what it really represents in the different initiated degrees. This comes from Albert Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry under the topic Dualism. And this is what he has to say. In the old mythologies, there was a doctrine which was supposed the world to have been always governed by two antagonistic principles, distinguished as the good and the evil principle. This doctrine pervaded all the Oriental religions. Thus, in the system of Zoroaster, we have Ahriman and Ormuzd, and in the Hebrew cosmogony. We find the creator and the serpent. There has been a remarkable development of this system in the three degrees of symbolic masonry, which everywhere exhibit in their organization, their symbolism, and their design the pervading influences of this principle of dualism. Thus, in the first degree, now great, he just said that, everything in Freemasonry has this in it. Thus, in the first degree, there is the darkness overcome by the light. The darkness overcome by the light. In the second, ignorance dispersed by knowledge. And in the third, death conquered by eternal life. Darkness overcome by the night light, by the light is superstition. Ignorance dispersed by knowledge. Ignorance. And the last one, death conquered by eternal life, fear. Ignorance, superstition, and fear. When you go through the symbolic ritual rebirth, you're conquering death. The symbolic representation of death is the thing that man has feared most, to die and to go into the unknown. The unknown is always personified by darkness or fear. It's personified by many creatures in various religious myths, and they allude to them over and over again. When you go through a ritualistic death and rebirth, the purpose of that, they call them death cults, whatever you want to call them, are basically meant to teach you not to fear death. That there is nothing to fear in death. Death is an inevitability. You're going to die, I'm going to die, everybody you know and I know are going to die someday. So to live your life constantly fearing death, in other words, clinging to comforts, clinging to religion, clinging to security, clinging to anything above the greater good, above the seeking to advance, is symbolic of fear. It's meant that the symbolic nature of being put into a sarcophagus and raised from the dead is meant to say that you have conquered death. In other words, you're not afraid of death. It doesn't mean true immortality. And anybody who tells you it does doesn't know what they're talking about. You got to understand things from the humanistic view. It doesn't make sense otherwise. It also means that not to cherish life. That life is something to be lived to the fullest of its ability, but not to cherish it and get caught up in the things of life. Because those are the things that they feel like inhibit progress. And they are the perfected man. They're seeking to perfect themselves and shed themselves of these things. That's why when you go through the third degree, you are raised by the strong grip of the lion's paw, also called the grip of the master mason. You are then given a word. The word is supposed to be the last name of God. And that continues you on your quest. Because once you go through the first 3 degrees and you learn the first 3 lessons, and I told you I'm going to take you through all 3 degrees, at that point, everything beyond the third degree is an advancement of your enlightenment. You've already accepted certain principles once you get through the first 3 degrees. That's why they say you're a master mason and there is no higher degree per se. There's only side degrees. Well, the side degrees are really just a continuation of your enlightenment, your further knowledge. And the further knowledge is meant to... if you can conquer ignorance, superstition, and fear, it has put in place the attributes necessary to go out and seek the truth, they believe. And as you go through these different degrees, they're meant to give you little pieces of truth. And as you go through the process, you learn more and more and more. And when you get to the end, you're supposed to have a conclusion. And your ability to comprehend the truth, your ability to demonstrate your intellectual capacity or your enlightenment will be determined by how you conduct yourself at that point, what you believe in. There is a myth. I don't know if it's true, but this is what I believe to be true. There's a time when people would go before the Grand Council, and they put the three main books of the religion, and they always make sure to include whatever religion you proclaimed when you started. And you're supposed to demonstrate to them. It says kiss the I guess, doctrine of your choice. I forget how they say it exactly. And you're supposed to kiss the one that you believe in. It doesn't matter which one, and they accept all of them, and they celebrate. Every single time you make a decision and you demonstrate your knowledge, they celebrate, regardless of what it is. But little do you know that it's a test by those who are there who know what's going on to see if you are truly enlightened or not. And if you go down and you kiss the Bible alone, they celebrate and go, congratulations. You're now, 33rd degree. And you walk on thinking that, hey, I'm a Christian, I'm accepted, everything's cool and dandy. And you can just be a Mason from that point on. If you kiss all three books, you have demonstrated a higher understanding. The Gnostic understanding. The belief that all religions are one, originate with the same place, and that you have adopted that principle. And you're even higher in their eyes, but they congratulate you just the same, and you're a Freemason from that point on. And they'll even, you may even be able to go and get involved in some higher level stuff, but who knows? I don't know. I don't think so. And then there's the final thing, which is you walk up and you kiss none of the books, which demonstrates to them the highest knowledge, which is that you have shed yourself of the superstition. Now, I don't know if this is true. This is just what I've understood from reading it. And when you're in that 33rd degree, you're surrounded by some of the most elite people, and they make sure they surround you with those people. It's not like people are there, because you could do something like that, and if they celebrate that, I've even heard that they even go so far sometimes as to proclaim that you're ridiculous and make you feel foolish. But after you leave, you're approached by somebody. I've heard all kinds of rumors. I don't know what's true, but this is what I understand it to be. But anyways, I'm at the end of my hour here. Check me out next week. I'm going to try to podcast the show, but check me out next week every Thursday from 6 to 8. This is Soul Real signing off. TruthLoveFreedom.org, Revere Radio Network. Peace. Been given chances, taking classes, keep my dignity. See, I pay my lady's name, but it's free to dream. Believe what you see. I believe in free, free roll, trapped in these streets, what it means to me. Government is crap, crap, what it needs to be. Cutbacks, fund that, yes, I do believe. We gotta loosen these, I need a creep of weed. Flash up your lantern now. Flash them up, flash them up. Flash up your lantern now. Flash up, flash up. Yeah, yeah. Flash up your lantern your mind.